Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. I'm Emily Owensworth, and today we're talking about what it really means to work in a team, and specifically a legal team. To explore this topic today, I am joined by Fiona Pacoa and Leilani Pacoa. Welcome, ladies.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Before we kick off into the topic, I think it would be great to get a bit of background about the two of you. So Fiona, tell us about you.
Thanks, Emily. My name is Fiona Pacoa. I have spent most of my professional life working in large multicultural teams in the development and aid sector, which I recognise is a little different to the legal profession, but I hope that we can draw on some of my experience. And most recently, I'm focusing on transitioning and supporting younger professionals with their professional journey. So I'm doing a lot more coaching and a lot more mentoring of young managers within our organisations.
You are going to be a great asset to this topic today then.
Thank you.
And Leilani, tell us about you.
Yeah, so my name's Leilani. I am a sport and exercise psychologist. I work with elite athletes, young people, people who are neurodiverse, people experiencing difficulties with eating, but also with teams. So understanding how different people or different athletes can contribute to different teams that they're part of, and being part of elite teams, high performing teams. There's a whole range of different contexts in which sports psychologists work. So I'm so excited to be here and to be talking about team dynamics and how we can get the best out of the teams that we're a part of.
Well, you're probably the best person to kick this off then, Leilani. What is a team? What are they made up of? And what are some common elements of teams?
Well, on a super basic level, a team is two or more people working together or coming together to achieve a common goal. So there's going to be lots of different teams that we are a part of in our lifetime. You know, we might start in sporting teams, we might be part of different teams within our schools or universities, group projects, and then into workplaces, there could be a whole different range of teams. Sometimes even family units could be described as teams. So lots of the things that we're going to be talking about today could apply to a whole bunch of different contexts, I would say. And a big part of team stuff is that I feel like there's so many skills that we aren't necessarily taught and are sort of just assumed we know how to do when we are a part of team dynamics. And every single team we are a part of, there is a different dynamic, different personalities, different goals, different expectations, different understandings of what we're trying to achieve. And even across different years, the dynamic or context could shift or change. And when we're thinking about legal teams, I guess the similarities I would assume to a sporting team would be that we need a common goal, we need to be able to collaborate, we need to understand our roles and responsibilities, and also have a level of trust. There are, however, some key differences we would also assume.
So what are the key differences then?
Well, a few things come to mind. At the top of that list would be the level of risk. Assuming that within legal teams there's likely to be very high stakes where mistakes have serious consequences. That might differ from some of the other teams that you're part of. Also, the structure of the teams. Legal teams would tend to be more hierarchical, more formal, and the membership of those teams would require certain criteria, standards, professionalism. And lastly, the culture of the teams may also differ because team culture is determined by the values, both individual and collective, our behaviours, our beliefs, But most importantly is how we're incentivized and how we're rewarded for being part of that team. And I would offer that within legal teams that might be quite different to some of the other teams that we're more familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really important to understand is how do we all individually then contribute to that team and therefore the collective outcome.
How do we know what our own contributions are and whether they are positive or negative and if they're assisting the team dynamic?
Yeah, I think a big criteria or a big part of that is having a level of self-awareness, and particularly from a psychological perspective, a big part of therapy or going and speaking to a psychologist is about building your self-awareness. So understanding what you're thinking, what you're feeling, how you are interacting with people in your day-to-day. And it is a process. It does require practice. There's no handbook on like how to be self-aware. Like people try and do that and try and create, books and resources, but it is, you can't just read it and then all of a sudden you're self-aware. You have to put in a bit of effort, and yeah, it requires time and reflection and some patience and sitting in some discomfort, maybe seeking some feedback from people that you trust. It's not just like I'm now self-aware. We can always be evolving and changing and being required to continue to reflect on who we are and what we're contributing to our lifestyle, our colleagues, our workplaces. But it's definitely a big skill. And like I said before, it's not necessarily something that we are taught, but it's definitely something we can learn.
But you said to be self-aware, it takes time and patience and some feedback from peers.
Mm.
Is there anything else that we can be doing to become self-aware? Is there, courses or, is it as simple as seeing a therapist, or what are your tips for becoming self-aware?
I think dedicating time is a big one. And there are resources, there are steps. But a big thing I think is... what would be some of the things I would say? Definitely seeking feedback is a big one. So whether that's from peers adjacent to you or from your senior associate or whoever is sort of above you, getting some insight into what they might see. I know there is a sort of framework that we can use to be building an understanding of ourselves, a level of self-awareness. There's lots of different questionnaires and things that we can be trying to do to assess where we might sit to the general population. But some super basic ones that people do speak about often is journaling, writing out our thoughts and feelings, getting feedback from others, creating space and time to sit in what we're experiencing, not just trying to get to the next thing, actually having some patience and sitting in what we're experiencing is a big part of that. But there are some particular frameworks that can also be helpful to get an understanding of to be able to build self-awareness. Did you want to talk about?
Yeah, thanks, Lani. As a coach, one of the first things we do with our clients is to gauge that level of self-awareness. And a really accessible way to do that is by undertaking some form of a trait assessment. And there's a great website which Emily will attach to the show notes. But I think one of the starting points is actually to go and do a personality assessment and really engage in the strengths and the weaknesses that come out from that process. The second thing that's really important is to actually do that process of assessing your values. And there's some really wonderful accessible resources, and one person comes to mind at the moment who's at the forefront of this, which is Brené Brown. So there's definitely things that are available for you to get an understanding of what it is, your sense of identity and your sense of self. But within the coaching realm, one of the frameworks that we use, it's called Johari's Window. And it's a really, really simple four-pane framework, which basically talks about what's known to you as an individual and what's not known to you, what's known to others about you, and also what others don't know about you either. And this plays out a little bit in relation to individual blind spots, which is an interesting topic that we might explore a bit further.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So what is a blind spot for people?
Yeah, well, this is where our sense of self gets a little bit interesting, because a blind spot is something that we don't necessarily see in ourselves, but others see in us. So think about a time maybe where we are in a negotiation, or we are in a situation where we've got multiple stakeholders around the room. Things might not be going quite to plan, and we behave or we respond in a particular way that we don't see it in the same way as others see it. So it's a blind spot to us. And blind spots are really important for us because they don't necessarily reflect who we think we are. Let me give you a couple of examples. When we are very focused on our work and we're trying to be very productive, we can at times tend to put up walls, invisible walls, and we are then seen as being unapproachable. But that's not in actual fact who we are. But that's how people see us.
So how do you stop people from seeing you that way? Or how do you become aware of that blind spot if you don't know people are thinking that about you?
Yes, so this is where, as Leilani was saying, that self-awareness and openness for somebody else coming, you know, and giving you that feedback and creating the environment for that to happen. And that takes a team kind of approach to recognizing the individual strengths and recognizing how, if we're going to achieve a common goal, we all have to collaborate, which means we all have to know more about each other. We have to understand each other. Right? Another really good example is that we might use very confident language. We might use a particular tone, and others in the room might feel as if you're sort of shutting them off, but you don't see yourself in that way. Others see you as maybe domineering or maybe overly, exactly. But you don't see yourself that way. These are blind spots that, another really, really good example is we all work at different paces. We all learn in different ways. But if you're not open to those differences and you just run ahead with the way that's your preference, what you're most comfortable, you're a fast speaker, you're a fast thinker, you know, you're thinking, you want to get it done, and your brain is going, and you're verbalizing all of that activity, and yet somebody else is there thinking,
maybe not processing as fast as you.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
And so they're feeling left out, they're not being included. That's not your intention.
Yes. But it all contributes to the dynamic and how the team is going to work together and how it's going to understand each other. All those things happen almost like under the surface.
Yes.
Yeah.
So having a level of self-awareness is a starting point. But then most importantly is then understanding that you also need to be open to the others in the team. And the individual sort of attributes, experiences and strengths that might be different to yours that they're then bringing to the team. And being aware of the openness that needs to exist within you to hear what others have to say, to understand that different perspective.
Yes. Yeah. And giving people time to say how they're feeling, to be open to listening to them, is probably a really big part of this from the other side as well.
Yeah.
And it's a fundamental element of multicultural communication. I've just spent 14 months in the Pacific, and often it's very difficult for people to sit in silence.
Mm. It's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable.
Everyone has something to say.
Yeah, you know,
and everyone wants to be heard.
Well, everyone just wants to fill the space. Yes, like this real discomfort of sitting in silence.
And if you're an extrovert,
yeah,
it's almost impossible just to sit there and not fill that void.
Yeah.
But we have to learn how to create the space and let those catch up with us, and let those find their voice, and just be uncomfortable for the little bit of time that it takes.
Mm. Yeah.
So who in the team has the responsibility for creating that space?
I think everybody in the team has a responsibility to contribute effectively to the team.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt that the leader of the team, the onus is on them to start that process. The leader of the team has to create the environment, the space, for every member of the team to feel that they are valued and they are connected to the goals of the team.
And there's a level of trust.
Yes.
Safety.
Yes. So the manner in which the leader sets the tone, delegates the tasks, establishes the boundaries, and is all critical to how the team member is going to feel about their role and the work that they need to do. And most importantly, the leader, the communication channels need to be very clear, but they also have to have a particular tone. They need to be encouraging an inclusive environment, an open environment, and where there's no judgment based on or adverse judgment on the contributions of other team members. You know, in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of work on psychological safety, particularly in the medical fraternity, but more importantly in organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And psychological safety ultimately comes down to an individual feeling that they will not be reprimanded or there will not be adverse consequences for them owning up to something that possibly had an adverse outcome.
So it's if someone was to make an error and being able to say, put their hand up and say, and confidently and safely say, I did this, it was my fault, I apologize, or not my fault, but you know, take ownership of that issue, if they feel confident doing that, as opposed to sort of putting a towel between their legs, staying in the corner, you know.
And I think, as I mentioned earlier, the stakes in the legal fraternity are high.
Mm.
And so mistakes could be very costly. And so therefore, the potential shame that an individual might feel, the fear that they might fear, or feel, should I say. And yet, as a leader, if somebody was to come to you with a mistake, the best possible reaction at the time is to ask them if they're okay. Mm. Nobody wants to make mistakes. Mm. Nobody wants to feel like that.
Yes.
So as a leader, your responsibility is to make sure that that individual feels okay about it. How you then respond to dealing with that mistake sets up the tone for the rest of the team.
Yes.
But what is really important is that member knows that you've got their back.
Yes. It's also quite interesting in terms of, because we work with clients, and we also have that team dynamic of the client, that you know, your mentor or superior as well. And sometimes clients will come to you and say, I did end up transferring, you know, my ex-partner or spouse, $50,000 under when you said maybe don't do it, or they were then felt pressured by the partner, and how we receive that communication, and you know, even having a bit of psychological safety there to a degree, and allowing that space for the client to feel comfortable with us, and
and it's definitely a process and takes I know Brené Brown talks about like there being like little steps in building trust and safety. It doesn't just sort of happen automatically.
Yep.
It has to happen over time, and there being, what does she use? It's kind of like the marble jar analogy or something of like trust and relationships and connections are built over little sort of experiences or things happen in a marble jar that then gets built up into having a trusting, open, safe relationship and therefore team dynamic. So being able to, I think some of the things she sort of talks about is like there being a level of integrity. So what you say then gets backed up in what you do and how you respond. So if you say as the leader or even as the team member, I'm going to do this, that is your word, that is your integrity. If you show up and you do that and you are staying true to what you've said, you're building that trust. You're putting another marble in the jar. If you say something and then you try and get out of it, you try and give it to someone else, so you don't stand up to your word, that's sort of like a little sort of micro moment where you've sort of taken a marble back out of the jar. I think that's what she sort of, one of the examples she uses.
Yes.
And
the person who's at the forefront, for anybody who's interested, Amy Edmonston is the author of a number of books, and she was the architect of the psychological safety framework, as it were, and she spent a lot of time with pilots and surgeons and surgical teams.
Yes.
So very interesting research. And she talks about the idea of that teams, high-performing teams, are not necessarily made up of the most qualified individuals.
Yes.
So what would you classify as a high-performing team then? Or what does Amy Edmonston say?
So, well, let's go back to the very beginning of the podcast when we talked about what do teams...
Yes.
What is a team?
Mm.
So a high-performing team is a team that demonstrates that they understand what their common goal is.
Yes.
That they've built trust, and trust is built through connection.
Mm-hmm.
As Lani just said, the integrity of individuals and how they show up. Importantly, all understanding individual roles and responsibilities, which are different, but we all understand them. And then the key to all of that is communication.
Yeah, I think another big part is the like active listening.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in a team and you're having a conversation, you're having a meeting, like being quite present, listening, actually understanding, not just thinking about what you're going to do next or what the next item on the agenda is, like actually being present and listening to what is happening in front of you is a part of that, I think, the communicating section at least.
100%. If there's one thing that we all would improve our relationships and our connections if we all learn how to actively listen.
Yes.
It's not just about hearing the words.
Yes.
But it's also understanding the intent, understanding the emotion. So active listening is a key skill that we should all be building.
100%.
I do feel like active listening is a skill you need to learn to an extent as well, because this day and age, you go and talk to someone and their phone vibrates, their phone goes off, an email pops up, and you think, oh, I've been waiting for an email on that matter. And so you're constantly distracted, or someone's walking past. I mean, we've just moved into open plan, and so we have a lot more distractions when you're having a conversation.
Yes.
We have the ability to move into private rooms, but if you're just doing it at your desks, you know, you do have the distractions of others around you. So I feel it is a learned skill that we all probably need to get better at. Is there a way to become a better active listener?
There is like a step framework. I'm trying to think of what it is. It's like a there's like the body language. There's a four step or five step. It's like the basics of psychology, so I should know this, but they we'll put it somewhere. But it's something like eye contact, body, like open body, like facing the person that you're speaking to. What else? Like giving the ums and the yes and the
connecting.
Like verbal confirmation of what you're hearing, also giving it back, so reflecting it back. Like, what I'm hearing is,
yes,
you're saying this.
Yes.
And then you've got an opportunity for the person that you're speaking to just say, no, actually, that's not what I was saying. I was actually meaning it more like this.
Mm.
Or, yeah, exactly, that's what I'm saying here. So doing the reflecting and getting the feedback sort of immediately on what you've just heard is a big part of that, I think. There is a...
In the coaching space, we're encouraged through our formal sort of education process to get really good at asking questions. So if there was one thing that we can do is just to back up Leilani there, we ask questions that demonstrate and sort of that feedback loop.
Yeah.
The questions demonstrate that we're hearing.
Yeah, we've been
and
listening.
That we're understanding. And there's also, I think, the process of slowing down.
Yes.
Let's all slow down a little bit, if we can. And... partner a little bit better with somebody else. So, you know, I think that there's that, you know, good partnering, you get into a little bit of a flow, and I'm sure you've
for sure.
You know, we've all felt that with clients and colleagues where you're working effectively together because you have that connection
and understanding
and the understanding.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you can reflect then, you know, a little exercise to do would be to think about a time when that flow existed with somebody.
Mm.
What was happening? What was going on? And particularly if you're finding it hard to get that same kind of connection with somebody else, you know, as Leilani mentioned earlier about we've got to practice some of this. Well, practice that reflection. Think about where it worked really well. What were you doing? What were you thinking? What was the other person doing? Take some responsibility for your role in that relationship or connection, and then start building then the way in which you then respond would be something that I might offer.
So we've spoken about the high-performing team then, and you know, each person having trust in one another, your integrity, having a common goal, being an active listener. And you said now to reflect on other times when you've worked with someone and it's worked well. If it's the case that you and that person had a pre-existing relationship, or you, I don't know, there was some other reason why you worked well, and now you don't get the choice to work with people that you know, what could you do?
I think the reality of working life today is we work in incredibly diverse spaces. Diversity that is determined by age, determined by gender, determined by ethnicity. And a key skill or attribute that we should all acquire is being comfortable with diversity, and going even further than that, recognizing that diversity, when accepted and seen for what it is, can create new ways of thinking, better ways of doing things, and innovate in ways that might not be available to us if we're still working with the same people or doing the same things. So one of the key learnings is to understand what it is from a self-awareness perspective. What are your attitudes towards differences? What is it that you, your beliefs or your perceptions on things that are different to you?
Okay.
Because we need to learn how to be open to what other people bring. And we need to see differences positively. We need to reframe difference and not see it as something that is either challenging or
combative even.
Exactly.
You might even want to throw in neurodiversity into the mix.
100%. Because I think this is going to be an evolving challenge in workplaces without a doubt. If you see the trends of young people that are going through our education system that are now going into the university system, by the way, which are not ready for them, and then coming out into workplaces. Mm. How open are workplaces to not only offering them opportunities, but indeed embracing difference,
understanding difference,
and how that could work within the team?
Exactly.
And how we can get their strengths.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. So if you can take a positive, a strengths-based approach to looking at how you work with people and understand what it is that they can bring, it opens up all opportunities. You might have somebody, for instance, who is incredibly focused, incredibly methodical, a high level of attention to detail, but others might see as being rigid. What they might bring to the team is the ability to take something from start to finish and interrogate it so completely.
Yes.
And methodically.
But then it kind of links back to what you were saying before, then that could be perceived in the team as like,
yes,
they don't listen.
Yes.
They're in their own little world. They're stuck,
yes,
on this one section and we got all these,
yep,
other bits we need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a leader, the ability to recognize what people do well and assign them responsibility to those tasks gives them an opportunity to feel valued and to also manage the team, message in the team to reinforce the fact that everybody's contributing with what they can bring.
Yes. Is it to the point where you would communicate within the team each person's role? For example, I'm going to get this person to do this because that's their strength, or do you think that's a bit excessive?
When teams, I think it's a really good thing to do.
Okay.
Sometimes it's important to explain to team members why certain people have been given the responsibilities that they have.
I think it contributes to like transparency and trust.
Yes.
And the safety stuff.
Yes.
Mm.
Yes.
Safety.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if people don't understand why certain people have been given tasks, we all know how that feels. And we all know how that might generate back chat and all of those sorts of things that are...
Or assumptions.
Exactly.
Mm.
They're not welcome in modern workplaces. You know, individuals need to understand the dynamics of what's going on, and a team leader has a responsibility to set the tone in that space. And it may well be that some decisions have been made that not everybody agrees with, but the key thing is that if they know why they've been made, it's much easier to actually accept that decision.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I think when we go back to that original point, was you can't necessarily choose who you're working with on a particular matter, but you can definitely choose how you show up,
yeah,
to work with them. You can take some responsibility for the way you think about how this partnership is going to work, and you can set the tone. Even as a junior member of the team, you can still show up demonstrating some degree of curiosity of how that's going to work and being offering the team what you can give to the team. So reframing it a little bit rather than seeing it as something that might be sort of a negative based on how maybe others in the team have worked with them or previous experience. Be a little bit more open to that reframing and taking some responsibility how you might change how you go about it.
Mm. I think it, from a psychological perspective, a key skill that I would teach a lot to athletes, individuals, is psychological flexibility. So when we are not super flexible, we are going to be more rigid, we need a high level of control, maybe we're a bit more anxious, we can't really let things go, and that all contributes to being quite stuck. So the ability to sort of it's a part of acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT for short, and there's a few different skills in that, but the overall idea is we want to be as psychologically flexible as possible, so that we can sort of roll with whatever's going to happen that day or that week or with that client or in that conversation, and not get too stuck on what happened here, what happened there. It's like, well, we've got to keep it moving. We've got to keep it rolling and be okay with, like, well, what can I focus on next? What can I bring to the next meeting or the next conversation and not get too rigid or stuck on what has maybe happened?
And it links nicely to psychological safety, because key to psychological safety is learning from things not quite going to plan.
Okay to make mistakes.
Yes,
being okay to
exactly then and as a leader, as I mentioned earlier, if somebody comes in and said that I've made this mistake, the key thing is first of all to check that everybody's okay, and then to say, okay, now let's sit down and let's actually unpack what happened.
Yes,
how do we learn from this?
Yeah.
And then the commitment of everybody to say, okay, we know what went wrong here. How do we learn and how do we adapt and how do we make sure that we're closing off those little gaps along the way? That
like
is
the lessons,
essence, exactly.
The takeaways.
And within my profession, we talk a lot about sort of like continuous improvement, where we're constantly doing, evaluating, adapting, doing, evaluating, adapting. So we're constantly looking at how do we get better at what we do? And we do that by actually reflecting on how things have gone. And a key activity that teams should always be doing is at the end of a particular cycle, a particular matter,
case,
is a debrief, is to sit down as the team and to reflect on what did we do really well, what didn't go according to plan? What are we going to do differently next time? Three very, very simple questions.
Yes, I love
that. Everybody can connect with. They're not in any way blaming. There's no language there. People can feel that, well, I can bring, I did this really well. I didn't do this particularly well. Might we do that differently this time?
We use a little good, better, how. So what was good, what could we do better, and how could we do that thing better or
that aspect? Yes.
Yeah.
And in teams, so if we go back to this idea of teams, teams are formed and there's often a lot of discomfort at the beginning of those teams forming, but I suspect in legal teams, you don't have enough time sometimes.
Yes.
You know, things are moving quick. You've got to get into it. So the role, setting that initial team briefing at the very beginning, what are we out to achieve? Who's going to do what? There's clear goal, clear purpose, clear responsibilities, understanding of risk and who's carrying that risk. What's at stake? And then once the matter's then concluded, is the final sort of sign off or the disbanding of that team would be some kind of event, whether it's your debrief, whatever it might be, but you're closing the loop and everybody then leaves that team having felt that that has been an experience for them.
Yes. And even if you're not closing that team or you're going to be with that team again, but what can you do better next time?
Yes.
For sure.
And that debrief is so pivotal and what probably most of us lawyers don't have enough time to do or do often enough.
Don't make time for.
Sorry. That's much more accurate.
Yes.
But no,
not
that is
billable.
True.
Yes.
Well, that's true, right? And we have our targets and expectations that, of ourselves and that other people put on us that we feel like, okay, this matter's done, but I've also got these other letters to draft, this other material to do. So there's always, you know,
the next thing.
Yes.
And one of the challenges, I think, is in a hybrid work environment where we're not necessarily all in the office. Mm. It's sometimes a lot easier to do these things when we're all sitting around the table like we're doing this afternoon.
Yeah.
And it can be done in 30 minutes.
Yes.
Or we could do it actually after hours, for instance, and it's more of a celebratory sort of event. We have to find ways of doing it when our teams are geographically dispersed. So we've got it. I personally use Mentimeter a lot with our teams, where we most recently
did.
So so Mentimeter is a great little app.
Okay. Mm.
Basically, it creates word clouds. So I did this. We had a very big strategy that we put together, and so we were doing our debrief on that. and the three questions were just put onto Mentimeter, and everybody's sitting at their computer and they're putting in their responses on the computer, and then the word cloud comes up on the screen, and you can all see it. You don't know who's put the words up there, which I guess was nice.
You can see all of the words.
Exactly, as they're coming in. And then you unpack that as a team. You know, what surprised you from what everybody's offering? And it's a really powerful way of, you know, using technology in a very positive way. It's about making time. It's so critically important for team dynamics that everybody's connecting. You've got to put it in your calendars.
And it wouldn't take that long. Like realistically, it doesn't have to take
30 minutes.
Yeah.
What do you recommend for people who are either just working on their own or a small team? It's just them and their boss in the office. There's only two people in the whole team. And you may have your client and then a barrister that's been on board, and maybe an accountant, but then they go off and do their own things. You wouldn't ordinarily do a sit down and debrief with them. Do you know what I mean?
But I think you could still do that for yourself. Like, that's a key part of the whole self-awareness stuff and the reflecting and spending time on thinking about what did you do really well? What did you feel went really well? What do you think could be better? You could still do that whole process as an individual for yourself.
Okay.
I would say.
We do a lot of sort of subcontracting of services, and it's a key part of what we do. We do go and ask our stakeholders, so it might be done a little bit differently.
Yes.
But there has to be some form of feedback into the organization about the level of service, the manner of service.
Yes.
Because how else are you growing? How else are you knowing how you're going if you're not getting the feedback?
I actually once had a barrister say to me in my first early years of my career, saying, whenever you conclude a matter, always ask for feedback from the barrister.
Yes.
And in my head I was like, isn't that kind of weird, like going to a barrister and be like, so what did I do good, what did I do bad? But I have done that most times since, to be honest, and it's interesting because they give you positives about things you may have doubted yourself on, or it is a good way to reflect.
Even in therapy, they have like people, like psychologists will give their clients questionnaires to fill out after sessions, after a period of time, to get some feedback around like what's happening in the room, because so much happens in the dynamic and under the surface. Like, we're doing certain, you know, activities and frameworks and things, but it's good to be, to get some feedback and conscious around like what's it like for everyone in the room, even when it is just you or the client. Or I don't know how that would work from a, like, if a lawyer was getting feedback from the client or what, but like a barrister getting some sort of, having three questions to send to someone, I think wouldn't be a bad idea to have in the back pocket, something to do.
I think this is a great way to end. If there's one thing that we should take away, either as a team member or as a team leader, is increasing our level of comfort with asking for feedback and coming up with those few little questions.
Yeah.
You know, what went well? That's a really easy question to ask.
Yeah.
Yes.
And for, you know, and how an individual responds to that. This, I agree, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Now, what might have not gone as well as you had hoped? Now we're talking blind spots. So you're giving an opportunity to somebody to be open and authentic about how they see themselves, that vulnerability that Brené Brown talks a lot about. Now then, as whether it's a peer or whether it's your manager or whatever, the ability to either confirm that, and so this is something we need to work on for the next one, or indeed to go, you know, I see that a little bit differently. And
you
then
get, like, an awareness of your blind spots.
Exactly.
Others. Yeah.
We all know how hard in all organizations, when it comes to talking about giving feedback or whatever, let's all chunk that down into little bites and let's do it more often.
Yeah, we don't need to wait for a performance review.
We don't need to wait for a performance review.
Yeah.
And as teams, let's get a much better at acknowledging others mm-hmm. and acknowledging others in the room with everybody else. If you started big team meetings with a gratitude segment, acknowledging somebody, you know, an achievement or an outcome, the whole vibe in the room completely changes.
Mm, yes.
And if you thank somebody, doesn't cost anything, but the impact that that has on that person, and then
the whole
dynamic,
yeah,
it completely transforms how individuals feel about being in that team.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we have our takeaways or tips for people to take away from today is ask for feedback. What did I do good? What can
yes.
I improve on? Are
yes.
there any other key takeaways?
I think spending some deliberate practice time in self-reflection, trying to build psychological flexibility. There's lots of different resources
yep.
and things we can link in. That could be a great
mm.
starting point if someone's like, where do I even start? We can definitely add in some resources and things
mm.
to try.
Yep.
Mm.
That's great.
And as a leader of people, the key thing is show some compassion. And that means being genuinely interested and curious about the people that you're working with. And the other thing is, you know, creating an environment where individuals feel connected to each other. That is a critical element of teams today.
Yes.
You know, increasingly people want to come to work to do purposeful work. They want to feel connected to the people that they're working with.
Mm.
And that is driving the decisions that young people are making. And in this global world where talent is increasingly scarce and is going to get increasingly so, you want to hold on to your good people.
Yes.
And to do that, you need to make them feel valued and connected. And that is on you as a leader.
Yep. Completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Leilani and Fiona, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
It has been much appreciated. And yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.